This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
It's Mary Chifo, Laurel on Star Trek Discovery, and you're listening to The Edge on Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Asian Tafe Deja E. Eshtok Sotash Gosvash Tralaitik Empajash Lamog Jash Bush Jash Kalesh Molor Mihoch Churu.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am your co-host, Liam Smart, and joining me today are my favourite Pataks, Nicholas Paul Collinson and Brandy Jackala. How are you guys?
Why am I a Patak?
You dishonour us!
That's the only other Klingon word I know other than kapla.
Oh, all right. But it's not like a... It's not like a nice thing to say, especially to a lady.
You're my beautiful Patak.
Oh, all right. You get a pass.
Yeah. You all right, though, you two? Anything new since the last time we sat ourselves in front of the camera and the mic?
No, nothing new at all.
I think Brandy does have a sexy piece of cardboard in the background, though.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, it is my birthday in 4 days. No, 3 days. I can do math. As of this recording, when this is out, it will have been my birthday on May 12th. I am now level 47. And I thought I'm going to get something Star Trek related for my birthday. And so I was looking on the Star Trek shop and they had a full to life size Spock cardboard cutout, the Ethan Peck Spock. And I said, that's it. I'm ordering that.
I'm having that.
And I did. And he arrived in 4 days, which was lovely. And Dave put him together for me. And now he is standing in the background that no one can see. You'll just have to use your imaginations.
But don't use it too well.
That's my job. So sorry.
So, if you haven't worked it out by our wonderful intro song, we're talking about the Klingons in Discovery today. I'm not quite sure how we did with our Klingon drinking song. I'm pretty sure Seven and the Doctor and Worf and that other Klingon dude has done it better throughout the series, but we thought we'll give it a try, hey, Nick?
Oh, yeah. We'll make it work. And if it doesn't match up, then it just sounds like we're drunk Klingons. So, you know, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I've noticed about drunk people trying to sing is that they're rarely in key.
Oh, yeah.
And don't usually know the words and have different tempos depending on who's singing. So, yeah, it's usually a kind of a mess. So, I think
I'm
you guys did better
anyway.
Yeah, well, I think you guys did far better than a bit of a mess.
Oh,
so,
good.
Well done you.
So, we're going to be sort of looking at what they're like in Discovery compared to how we've seen them portrayed in other series within Star Trek. So, maybe we'll just go quickly with a quick initial thought, perhaps. Brandy, what did you think?
About Klingons in Discovery or in general?
Correct. You can do in general if you want.
No, no, let's start with Discovery. This is a Discovery show, so let's start there.
Are you sure it's not Australia's Got Talent? Take by that silence. It's a no.
No. I'm sorry. It's a no for me. It's a no for
That's
me
fair.
This time. But, you know, I appreciate you coming out and showing us your talent. Anyway, let's see. The Discovery Klingons. Well, I'm not one of those people that gets freaked out when there is a redesign of a particular race, because nobody seemed to give two hoots and a holler when the Trill showed up in Deep Space Nine and were very different than they were in Star Trek The Next Generation. It seemed like no one really bat an eye at that, but that was just my perception of it at the time. So when I heard there were going to be Klingons in Discovery, I thought, well, that's fair, because this would be right about the time that they would be at war. So that makes sense that they would be your prime antagonist. I didn't expect them to get so heavily into the culture as they did, and I actually appreciated seeing this different time where the houses are not united and there's not a chancellor and all of these other things going on where everybody's at war with themselves. And how do you unite an entire group of people that large and that uncooperative, find an enemy to fight? And that's exactly what they did with Starfleet and the Federation.
I'm the same. I mean, I was never like super like a big fan of the Klingons, especially like very Klingon centric episodes in like previous Next Gen or DS9 and that sort of stuff. Like I thought they were cool. Like there were some good characters, like Worf and Martok are really fun and that sort of stuff. But yeah, like as soon as we started seeing how they were developed and like redeveloped in Discovery and like the new look, and yeah, like Brandy said, like expanding their culture so much, that's what really got me into it and got me actually like taking them seriously. So I really appreciate that. And I love the portrayal of the Klingons in Discovery.
Yeah, I'm sort of similar. I heard a lot of people whinging about, oh no, they've been redesigned, etc. But you know what? I've said this before on this podcast as well, that it's at that point 2017. Production-wise, they're not going to look like they looked in 90s era Star Trek, you know, because skills have moved on and technology has moved on to be able to make even more fantastical looking creatures. And you know what? They still kept a lot of the design elements. They've just updated them. Mm. And I was appreciative of that.
I also really liked seeing the different clothing instead of the same Klingon dress that we're so used to. And they brought different colors into it. Yay! I enjoyed that.
Some wonderful looking gothic design to them.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
Denas. Now, before we get started on some of the other bits and pieces, I thought it might be an idea for us to bring us up to speed on where the Klingon Empire is come 2256, when the Battle of the Binaries started. So, I've made a big page of notes here that I thought I'd read through, which probably will bore you to tears, but we'll do it anyway. So,
ready.
So, the majority of the Klingon Empire's history and beliefs obviously center around Kalesh. So, Kalesh the Unforgettable, as he's called, became the first emperor of the Klingon Empire in the 9th century after defeating Molor in the city of Kamchi. So, Molor, who was the tyrant, sent many warriors into the city, and after which, obviously, the garrison left, leaving just Kalesh and the Lady Lukara behind to fight and emerge victorious. Kalesh also defeated the Fekri, which aren't to be confused with the Fekla, which is the devil or the demon in Grethel. But I don't really know too much about the Fekri, to be honest. But after defeating them, Kalesh created like the honor and warrior-driven society that we know Klingons to be. 500-odd years later, the Gamma Quadrant aliens, the Herc, pillaged Kronos. Now, nobody knows the actual names for the Herc, because Herc is the word for outsider in Klingon. But they also stole the Sword of Kalesh, which obviously for a society driven by Kalesh, and that is understandably an awful thing. Although we do know the sword was found again by Dax and Worf and that other Klingon dude in the 2370s on Deep Space Nine.
You mean Kor? Come on.
Oh, I don't remember their names. I'm watching Deep Space Nine again, though, because I will admit I binged watch, and you don't remember as much when you binge watch.
That's true. I agree.
I found that out on Rob Chapman's thing last night. Yeah, on his quiz night, which everybody should do, by the way. So, anyway, the Klingon Empire had a society that had an emperor, like Kalesh was, up until the 21st century, which was then taken over by Chancellorship and the Klingon High Council. Humans' first contact with the Klingon came in the mid-22nd century with Jonathan Archer leading the NX-01 to Kronos to deliver a guy who they saved, and I can't remember their name, but for a society that was all about honour and death in glorious battle, etc., that would probably be really embarrassing for the Klingon Empire. More stuff happened in Enterprise with the Klingons that I won't go into, except that in the 2150s, a medical group led by a Klingon named Untuck, I think that was his name, stole or, let's just say, acquired samples of DNA from the human augments who are like super people. We all know who the human augments are. One of the test subjects, though, had Lividian flu, which then somehow combined in, I don't know whether it's good or bad virology, but with the augment DNA, which caused Klingons to have their own version of COVID-19 to lose their cranial ridges. And all of Enterprise pretty much led them to hate humans and the Federation, and the Klingon Empire broke down and sort of had little skirmishes here and there at places like Denver and Denver or Doctari Alpha, maybe both of them. But they mostly avoided each other until 2256, when the Federation-Klingon War was started with the USS Shenzhou and T'Kuvma on the sarcophagus ship, who was the leader of some kind of cult on the fringes of Klingon society, who wanted to try and join the Empire together again, just like Kalesh. And then we get to Star Trek Discovery.
Wow.
Well done.
And obviously we know a hell of a load more information after Star Trek Discovery through the rest of the series, but I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's fair.
Also, I did learn a couple of things that I didn't remember from Enterprise, that it was the Lividian flu.
Hmm.
Yep.
That was the issue. So, but yeah. Anyway, so then that leads us on to the dreaded, apparent dreaded anyway, change of the look. So, I guess all three of us can probably sum up the change in look as I don't really care. But, you know, let's have a look at it anyway.
Okay.
So, we first saw the Klingons in TOS. Obviously, TOS had a really low budget. No, well, let's just call it 1960s technology. So, they were basically just slightly darker-skinned looking Asian characters with beards.
Yes. They actually reminded me a lot in attitude of the culture of Japan, in a way.
Yes.
Very proud and also very, what's the word I'm looking for here? Kind of xenophobic in a way. So, yeah. But
so, like a mix between Japan and the Mongols, in a way.
Yeah. And that's when we first see Kor, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same actor playing him in Deep Space Nine, because that is awesome. Well, see, that's my first experience with Klingons, because I grew up watching the original series. So, they were scary when I was a kid, because they were aggressive and irritable.
Yeah, see, I mean, we all know now that I still haven't managed to get all the way through TOS. So, I've seen maybe one episode with Klingons from the original series. So, I'm not so tied up to the look of them on that series.
Yeah.
Obviously, as I say, when they were written, they wanted them to be oriental bearded aliens with, as you say, Brandy, the Japanese warrior or samurai culture. But then we moved on to the movies and they suddenly developed cranial ridges.
Which actually I thought was interesting. Even as a kid, I was just like, oh, so like they look different now. Okay.
They just look cooler and more badass.
Exactly. They were even scarier than when I was four. So the first time I actually saw Klingons that I remember knowing that they were Klingons was in the episode The Trouble with Tribbles, unfortunately. Not one of my favorite episodes, but that's where you find out that Klingons and Tribbles do not get along.
That's kind of funny, though.
It is. It is. And they enjoy taunting the Starfleet officers and make Scotty really angry. Mm. They can insult the captain all they want, but do not insult the Enterprise.
So, Brandy, do you remember at all what people were saying? I suppose, obviously, there was no online culture, obviously, back in the 70s, etc., and you were only young. But was there much discussion at all, if you remember, about them?
Not that I was aware of, but then again, it's not like I was old enough to belong to fan clubs or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have exposure to other fans in that regard. So
okay.
I just remember, and the first time that I saw Star Trek the Motion Picture, it was probably 1982 or so. It was, so I was probably about 9.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And people... And my mom was surprised that I sat through the whole thing, but then I had also already sat through the entirety of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, wow.
As a child and still love it. But yeah, so I wasn't aware of any of that. I just, when we watched the motion picture and I'm like, well, who are these guys? And my mom's like, those are Klingons. I'm like, oh, okay. That was it as far as I was concerned. They, you know, they're Klingons. So they're Klingons. That's what the folks who make the show are telling me, so that's what I believed.
So, obviously, then we see the Klingons all the way throughout the series, all the way through to Enterprise with the cranial ridges, and then we get the augment virus that basically wrote that discrepancy out of confusion and into canon. What did you think of that particular aspect of Enterprise writing that in? Did you think it was worth it? Did you think it was a waste of time? Do you think it was a neat little way to tie up a discrepancy from the real world into canon?
I choose option C because I thought, because, you know, the only comment we'd ever gotten on it really was Worf saying, we do not talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's all we had. So we knew something weird had happened. I personally enjoyed them taking that consistency, or rather that inconsistency, and saying, okay, how can we make this believable? And honestly, the Klingons messing with augmentation makes complete sense. So it doesn't, it never bothered me. I just thought, oh, okay. Yeah, I can see how that would work. So, and that's funny. It's just science doesn't always obey the rules that we set for it, because science has its own rules that we haven't even discovered yet.
We also get another bloody Sung character in that episode.
Oh, yes.
Honestly, though, he was slightly less annoying than others, but I actually, there are parts of that particular storyline that I actually enjoyed, and probably one of my favorite things was the Orion slave market. I know it shouldn't be that, but you know, basically it was funny for me because the wrestler Big Show,
that's right,
the guy who was basically holding up to Paul like a doll, just picking her up like she was nothing, because that guy's huge.
Oh yeah.
He made a very good Orion, and he acted like picking her up like she weighed nothing. And the look on her face while it's happening, too, is just love it. Not that I wanted to see her get auctioned off as a slave. I'm just saying that it had moments that I enjoyed.
I think it's cool whenever they do a little thing to like try to tie stuff together. At the same time, I would have been fine if they just left it with Worf saying, we don't talk about it, and just have that being like a little like meta thing of them being like, yeah, we understand that they look different, but you know, we're not going to acknowledge that in storyline. It was still fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like how in Brighter Chaotica in Voyager that they do that little self-reference of that sets are expensive. You know, it's sort of they could have done it like that.
Yeah.
But see, I appreciated the little I won't call it a correction, but a little explanation. I thought it was cool, and it made for a good little story arc through Enterprise. Because I think season 4 of Enterprise did quite a few of those little cool storylines that added up into Future Trek without making them seem overly Picard-like. I'm going to just leave it at that.
Well, and we got to see a lot of Dr. Phlox in that particular storyline, so that made me happy.
So then we move to 2016, 2017, and we get that little image that was leaked about Klingon extras.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole fandom blew up.
Yeah. I remember seeing that image put next to the image of Dr. Bashir from, God, what's the episode called? Trials and Tribulations. They're just going, those are Klingons?
Yeah.
That'd have been a good little meme.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like that was a bad picture for it, because, like, in that picture where they're just sitting around without, you know, the correct lighting and everything from actually being on set, they looked really weird and very different from anything that we're used to. So, obviously, people were going to lose their minds over that. And I saw it too. I was like, those don't look like Klingons. This is like, I just saw it. I was like, no, they're probably something else and people are getting worked up about nothing. And then, obviously, it turned out they were, but then we saw them, like, in the show, in the right context. I was like, oh, no, these are Klingons and they're really cool.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. People love to take things out of context. They love to manipulate things to fit whatever narrative they want. And it just really drove me nuts that people were freaking out over this. And I'm like, really? This is the hill you're going to die on? Okay. Whatever. Whatever.
It's interesting because when I first saw it, my first thought was they're not Klingons. What have they done? But then you look at it closely and it's just an evolution of what a look would look like, just what through TV goes through. And I've already mentioned it not that long ago, but just the style and creativity. I think it's matches what people would expect from a Star Trek show or expect from a sci-fi show in, you know, the late teens, 20-teens.
Or, yeah.
What do we even call those? 20-tweens? I don't know. The twins. We'll call them the twins. Sure. The twins. Let's not call them the twins. But, you know, like, they wouldn't expect to go into something as grandiose as The Expanse and see something with a rubber head on them.
Yeah.
Or, do you know, they wouldn't go into something like even the reimagined Battlestar Galactica and see that. So, you can't expect to use them again because the show would become a laughingstock of sci-fi, I feel.
Yeah. No, you're right.
The thing is, you can't please fans ever, because when you've not had Trek for so long, not new Trek, since 2006, that was when-
For series, Enterprise. Yeah, 2005. Yeah.
When you haven't had new Trek for that long, people just start to build in their minds what Trek is. And the thing is that is different for every single person. Trek means something different to me than it does to you, Nick, or to you, Liam. And that's great.
Yeah.
We can still talk about it and agree on many things, but I'm going to have a different experience with Trek because no one is exactly like me. And that's the thing. We're all different because infinite diversity and infinite combinations, folks. So everybody just losing their mind at this one little thing just made no sense to me. Because I thought, you're getting new Trek. Are you seriously upset about this? It doesn't correlate in my brain.
See, for me, I was just sitting there thinking, in the end, I'm like, okay, cool. Because if I get a really good story out of it, that's what Trek is to me.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's exactly. Really good stories in a universe that is so expansive that you can pull stories out of thin air, and if you can make them, like, entwine with other things from previous shows, or it can be something completely new. But at the end of the day, these are still Klingons. They just look more modern, and I'm thankful for that.
Same.
I don't want them to look like original series Klingons, or like Next Generation Klingons, or even like Enterprise Klingons. I don't want that. I want them to look just modern. Yeah, you don't need to try to match an aesthetic from 20 to 50 years ago. You really just don't. Don't do that.
So, Discovery made them obviously completely bald, no hair, which I feel like people had a lot of issues with, but they still had the ridges, but it shows the ridges go all the way down the back of their head and down the back of their spine.
Of course. We've already seen that from Worf.
Exactly. And it looks really, really good. Now, they've said off of the show, like, it hasn't been made into canon, but they've said that the reason for all the Klingon ridges is because they have extrasensory receptors, which would make sense because they're pretty much apex predators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are have evolved to be these warriors, these fighters, which, you know, does make them very one-track minded, which we'll probably go into later. But one could argue that these senses are heightened when they're bald, and therefore, as it said in the show, they now grow the hair back because the war is over. They would need to be bald so they could, I don't know, feel people from behind them. I don't know. You know what I mean, though. Like, in a fight.
Oh, no. Yep. I totally understand. They're more aware. They need to be on their toes at every moment.
Yeah. That's one of the details about sort of the process that went into the redesign of them that I loved so much, is that they looked at a whole lot of the different, like, details that were already there and were like, okay, what function can this actually serve? So yeah, like the ridges and like the sensory organs and stuff. It was even the bit where they were talking about the Klingon emblem, like the sort of trifoil thing, and they sort of stylized mm-hmm. that to look like, you know, someone with their arms sort of like spread out, falling downwards, and saying that is like an image of, like, it's a stylized image of like a Klingon warrior, like falling somewhere, like falling into like Grethor or Stovakor or something like that. Yeah. Just, the detail that went into the like aesthetics of the design is brilliant.
Their outfits as well. Like, you already alluded to it, Brandy. The outfits are so much better. I mean, they still had a little bit of the we all wear the same kind of thing when it comes to the sarcophagus ship. But I mean, I suppose that could be a sort of uniform under T'Kuvma, potentially. Mm-hmm. But my favourite is Denas, the female from House Dukor.
Yeah, she's the one with all of the jewels and stuff on her face, isn't she?
The jewels on her face.
She looks really cool.
The outfit that she's wearing. Like, somebody needs to cosplay her and send me a picture.
Mm. I mean, I like that each house really kind of had its own look going on, which was great.
And that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Where should we go to next with our Klingons?
Did you want to talk about the use of the Klingon language?
Yes. I don't really have too much to say about it other than thank you. We have an alien that we're working with. Therefore, we should have an alien language. Obviously, I understand that it's a show and we need to understand what's going on. But, wow. The fact that we got a fully fledged language, it's kind of like the languages that are in Game of Thrones, etc.
Yeah.
As well, Dothraki or whatever.
Yeah, and like Klingon was already a fully fledged language, or a conlang, I think, for like a constructed language for like fiction.
Constructed language.
It was one of the ruling out the like 7 million that J.R.R. Tolkien came up with when he was writing Lord of the Rings. I think Klingon was basically one of the first like full languages made up for fiction. But yeah, to have them fully speaking it, because they weren't just speaking it, they were like creating how it works. Like, they had much more of like an accent to it when they were speaking. And even like there was an interview on one of the after shows or something, I think, with Mary Chifo talking about she worked with an accent coach to come up with what the Klingon accent would be when speaking English, which was just, there's so much detail. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is what it's going to be. You're not just going to talk with an American accent if you've got like a completely Klingon tongue.
Yeah, she really worked hard.
Oh,
really worked hard. She went above and beyond just doing a great performance.
The only thing is, I do have some problems reading subtitles. Not that I can't read, but I get very distracted by them. So, I was appreciative that it wasn't completely in Klingon, but we got a lot of it. And so, I think it struck the right balance for me. I remember going to the cinema once when I was maybe about 20, and then I wanted to watch a show and I didn't realize it was in French completely. That was interesting. I got a headache after reading all the subtitles for an hour and a half.
Yeah. Dave and I are big fans of martial arts films, so we got very used to reading subtitles, and I'm a really fast reader anyway.
I'm not, so.
And once, I mean, if you're watching something that's completely subtitled, it's kind of a little bit awkward at first, and then about 10 minutes into it, it just becomes part of it. You're just doing it without really thinking. I've also watched a lot of anime with subtitles because more often than not, unfortunately, the dubs are not great. Like, the dub of Akira is horrible. I cannot watch that with the English dub. I watch it with subtitles.
It added to the overall feeling, which they got with the look as well in this, I think, of the Klingons being sort of more foreign and alien compared to the Federation. Just because, like, the ways we've seen them previously, and especially, like, and it makes sense in Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, when they're much closer and there's a lot more contact between the Federation and the Klingons, that they seem a bit more human and there's a lot more common ground. You know, whereas in this one, like, they look so different and they're so kind of like almost animalistic, and they've got like the language is so impenetrable without, you know, having subtitles and that sort of stuff. It's just like they felt much more other.
Yeah. And that'll be what they were going for, probably.
Well, yeah, because how many humans have seen a Klingon ever?
What, in real life?
No, I mean in the show, in the history of the show. Because really, who was, that we know of, the last Starfleet group, the last Starfleet human to come in contact with a Klingon? Jonathan Archer.
Well, that's the last one to have gone to Kronos.
Yeah. So, they probably have no idea what to expect. And that makes sense.
So the next thing I thought would be cool to look at is the portrayal of a female chancellor. Laurel chronologically is the first female chancellor that we see of the Klingon Empire. Obviously, we've seen, what's her name? The lady from Undiscovered Country?
Azetbur.
Yeah, that one. She was obviously the first Klingon chancellor that we see as a TV show watching it as a female chancellor. But typically, though, in Klingon culture, it's the males that dominate public life. And there were even episodes that say that law prohibits females from being on the High Council.
And from being chancellor, or else Lursa or Betor would have assumed the chancellorship, or stolen the chancellorship, as the case may be. But no, they had to go find another Duras in order to do that. They couldn't do it themselves.
But does that make you think that perhaps the laws were changed around the time of Gowron and Martok? Because we've had Azetbur and obviously Laurel.
Well, unfortunately, our own history shows us that we think we're so progressive, and then there comes a period of regression where we revert to sexism or racism or what have you, and become, very untrusting of anything not like what we perceive to be the norm. So it tends to go in cycles, like in
the 50s. Two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah. In the 50s, it was McCarthyism. Suddenly anyone who had, who wasn't completely for capitalism, oh, you're a communist. And that was a dirty word.
Reds under the bed.
Yeah, and they would just blacklist people who may or may not have actually been communists. I sincerely doubt that most of the people they blacklisted actually had any kind of communist ties. And when we speak of communism, I think people have a different definition of it, because there's communism in air quotes, and there's communism. Because basically what communism is that everybody shares everything. That's why they call, those hippie places a commune, because they are practicing communism. And that's what actual communism is. But as a political affiliation, it's very different, and people have perverted it for their own gain.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense that any culture would like, could cycle like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it could be the case that they've gone two steps forward with Azetbur, but then, they've gone one step back and they've made this war. Yeah.
Well, just look at what is going on in the world today.
Exactly.
Mm.
Would you have believed 5 or 6 years ago that this would be happening like that, like it is? We just
with as, the increasingly insular nature of particular countries.
Well, not only that, but people electing extremely stupid leaders.
Well, yeah, it's not just in America. They've got one in Belarus as well. Yeah.
Oh, I'm aware. And the UK ain't doing so great on that front either.
Nor us.
Oh, I mean, I feel like we're better than some places, but yeah, I agree. We are pretty silly in some things.
Yeah, it's just the way that it tends to be. Everything goes in cycles. And that is true, I think, of all sentient beings. So the Klingons would not be exempt from that. So saying that they couldn't have had a Klingon chancellor that was a female because they said this in this time. Yeah, in that time, that would be how that was. But that's the thing. Things change. Things go around and they come back around. It's just the way we tend to work, I guess. It's weird. Mm. We don't learn from our mistakes, I guess. That's the big takeaway from this.
So what about female representation or female, what's the word I want to use? Portrayal, I guess, of females in the Klingon Empire? Because obviously the only females I actually really remember from, say, DS9, TNG, and Voyager was obviously B'Elanna, but she was half Klingon. You had a love interest of Worf at some point or something, but the rest of them just seem to be aggressive females. You're looking
you
at
mean
me like
Kayla?
I can't remember. I can't remember names.
Kayla.
And then you've had like aggressive females, like the females that went on top of Neelix in a few of those episodes, or you've had Lursa and Bator, whose unfortunate clothing choices, you know.
Well, and then there were the females when Riker did that that foreign exchange student and went to serve on a Klingon ship, and there was a lady Klingon that thought he was pretty tasty. Unfortunately, up until this point, I think they've been sexualized way too much, even starting with the original series. Just stop sexualizing women. Or if you're going to sexualize women, then you dang well better sexualize the men. It's called equal rights. So if you do it to one gender, you have to do it to the other.
Yeah. See, with Laurel, she wasn't, I don't feel, hypersexualized.
Absolutely.
I mean, she
not.
Was, she was alluring. I believe that in terms of her persona, if you know what I mean. But she wasn't like a sexual character. She was powerful.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say there?
No, I totally get what you mean. And I think a lot of people overreact to the one scene in which we see her as a sexual being. Mm.
Oh,
which is a flashback for one thing. But it was just kind of like, okay, you guys are taking the absolute wrong thing away from this. But that's typical, especially in America, because we are so afraid of sex here.
But you see, again, I viewed that particular scene with the Klingon, like, semi-nudity is, hello, it's 2018 when that aired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, have you seen what they put on HBO?
Yes, like, I have. Frequently. There needs to be, honestly, though, there needs to be more peen. There just isn't enough peen.
Yeah, I need double peen.
Yes. Even in Westworld, there just isn't enough peen. It's like, okay, for every fully frontal nudity of a woman, you should be having full frontal nudity of a man.
I agree. From a standpoint, totally from just equal rights.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Equality. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then we've also got Denas, who we see, who is just...
She looks very regal.
So, just... I love her. Like, she's probably my favorite look of all the Klingons that we get in Discovery.
She certainly stands out.
So, I think that's one of the biggest changes that we see, though, in just how we show the Klingons in just what we see from Laurel.
Yeah. Laurel is, to me, and I've said this before, like, almost certainly my favorite character of the series. She's definitely Moya's favorite character, just favorite thing about the whole show. And, yeah, I think in general, just, like, the way that the character was like portrayed and written, and the way that she was portrayed by Mary Shifo has just done so much for Discovery, for the show, for, yeah, like we say, the way that female Klingons are represented. Like, she had power and she had like her own like authority and autonomy. And it's like, whereas in the past, like obviously with like the kind of cleavage windows and the costumes and stuff, like they were very sexualized as objects, you know, and Laurel is not in any way like chaste or like not a sexual being, but she is like on her own terms, I think is what I'm trying to say.
That's the word. She's portrayed as a leader.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A leader. Yeah.
And I feel like, though, if she were a male Klingon, this is, and I'm not saying this as far as writing is concerned, I'm saying it as far as Klingon culture is concerned at this time. I feel like if she were a male, no one would have had a problem with her as Chancellor.
Mm.
But because she's a female, they're just not okay with it. And that's why, like,
people on the outside or people within the show?
No, people in, no, I'm talking about Klingons.
Yeah, like the Klingons. Characters within the Klingon Empire.
Yes. Like the House of Cole. I mean, it's just kind of like they just do not like the lady in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so few female heads of houses.
Yeah.
That I don't really see many, if any, that I think that this is coming into one of those times where women can't be chancellors. They have Laurel and then later, you know, but I think that's probably like, nope, we're done with ladies for now.
It could be a case of like Elizabeth the First, how she was literally the only one that could potentially be queen in that line.
Yeah.
It could be that that's how Denas got there potentially.
Yeah, it is. It's quite possible, but it still feels like they're not really that enamored of women being leaders.
Mm.
Which I think it's because women are more balanced and they are not as bloodthirsty as males tend to be, especially when you think about Klingons. So they tend to be more uniters than they are dividers, if that makes sense.
Which Laurel definitely is.
Yep.
So what I also really like, and I thought I should mention, seeing as today, at least here in Australia, it's Mother's Day. So I think it's really cool that, you know, in Laurel's speech, she says, "Don't call me Chancellor. I deserve a fiercer title. Call me Mother."
Because mamas are fierce.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fierce mama.
Unfortunately, it's Saturday where I am, but in this country, tomorrow is Mother's Day as well, so.
So another thing I just quickly wanted to briefly mention, and probably don't need to go too in-depth with this one, is just the look of Boreth and the High Council. The High Council particularly, right, inside that giant cave-looking thing. I thought it looked cool. Just from an aesthetic point of view, I liked it.
As a, for me especially, as like, you know, a fan of like just goth stuff in general, metal music, I was just, yes, I love this. Like, it looked so metal. Especially Boreth looked like the set of a black metal music video or something like that. It's just like all of these gothic arches and like the council chambers and stuff on Kronos, where they have this, I'm sure there are a lot of places there that had these like hexagonal columns, like, which actually looked like, so they're real things. It's like if you've seen the Giant's Causeway in the north of Ireland, or if you're more local to me, the Organ Pipes in the Organ Pipes National Park, they're these hexagonal, like, basalt magma columns. And there were definitely some of those sort of in the background of the kind of mountains and stuff surrounding the council chambers, or at least surrounding, like, Laurel's mansion or, like, house where she was living as the Chancellor, with, like, the lava and stuff underneath. It just looked super cool.
Mm.
It was like over the top, but in that really wonderful, like, heavy metal kind of way, which just suit the Klingons perfectly from my point of view.
Heavy metal Klingons, yeah. You know.
Yeah, Boreth, that building is actually part of a university.
Oh, really?
And yes,
where,
it is.
Where at? Where?
I want to say it's in Canada. So,
I suppose that would make sense.
No, they flew
all the way out to Azerbaijan.
God. Yeah. No, I forget what it's called. I should have rewatched Through the Valley of Shadows with the commentary on again, because it's Anson Mount and Ethan Peck on commentary for that episode on the Blu-rays. And yeah, I learned so much about that location. Like when you first enter, well, like when Pike first enters, that basically that big lobby and T'Novik is up on that balcony, etc. That is the exact same room for the room where the time crystals are, just shot from a different angle and redressed. Ah. But you would never know that to look at it.
Oh my God. Yeah. Knox College at the University of Toronto.
Wow.
Yep. I figured it was probably Toronto. Apparently they say it Toronto there. So yeah, they don't pronounce the second T. Where in Utah, we just make it a sound, like, are you going to the mountains?
Okay.
I live in Layton.
Okay. So one thing I guess that's changed, or I wouldn't necessarily say changed, but that we grow on a little bit within the Klingon Empire that's shown in Discovery is just their culture in general. Now, Nick, I know you wanted to talk a lot about the differences and what made you like Discovery Klingons a lot more than maybe the other iterations across the other series. So, yeah, take it away.
Sure. Yeah, well, I think I've mentioned a bit before that, yeah, there are certainly things that I liked about Klingons prior to Discovery, like certain characters when they showed up, especially like Worf and Martok and some of that stuff with them in Deep Space Nine. Like, I really liked kind of the interplay between Martok and Sisko as like sort of the two leaders of their allied factions. But yeah, overall, like, they were very monolithic. Like, it was very much like the Klingons are kind of one thing. They're all about honor and being warriors. And that's kind of it. There were a few except somewhat recently I watched The Undiscovered Country again, and the Klingons are brilliant like that. And I would love to see a Klingon villain spouting Shakespeare in Discovery again. That would be fantastic. It's just so, so over the top and so hammy. And I love that. Yeah, they are just like, in Discovery, they're so much more, like, multidimensional. Yeah, it's like we got different houses and, like, different groups of Klingons with different traditions. Like, there's that one thing that we've always had in the past of, like, the way Klingons react when someone dies is, like, they have the thing where they, like, roar to warn the ancestors that that another warrior is coming to Stavrokor, which is cool. And I like that we got that as well. But the idea of the sarcophagus ship, when before then, like, the few references there had been is just like, oh, no, Klingons don't care about the body of a dead warrior because, like, they believe that the soul has left and is gone. And then people were bringing that up. It's like, why would they have a sarcophagus ship? Why would they care? It's like, well, no, because this is a different house that has a different culture that does revere the remains of their ancestors.
I mean, in that respect, it is very narrow-minded to think that one culture in Star Trek will do all the exact same thing.
Yeah.
When you consider that that empire is over multiple star systems, when you just look at how different people on Earth, you know, honor their dead, between whether it's Europe, Australia, the Aboriginal culture, ancient cultures from all sorts of places, how they do it. They mummified people in the past, you know, like,
yeah,
it's very simplistic to think that all Klingons do this. And I stand very much corrected in what I've said in the past about the Romulans on Picard. It's like, oh, they don't have the bony
ridges
thing in there. Yeah, in their face. It's the exact same reason. And I'm very appreciative of Discovery and Picard as well, but Discovery in relation to the Klingons, for doing that, for changing the fact that they are not just a one-
yeah.
dimensional race. And I hope they do that for things like the Andorians as well.
Mm.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
We need more Andorians.
Definitely.
We do, really do. I want more Andorians.
Which I think we're going to be getting in season 3. So.
Mm-hmm. That would be lovely. But I mean more than just one or two Andorians. Let's go to Andor or Andoria, depending on which
on
Star Trek
you
series
ask.
You're
yeah.
watching at the time.
Yeah, which one is that? I'm like,
I feel like so many things, it is a discrepancy in the like TV show in the canon was then someone somewhat tried to explain it in a novel. And I think it's like Andor is a gas giant and Andoria is a moon around that gas giant where the people live, or maybe the other way around, something like that.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Somebody go to Memory Alpha and look.
Oh, that's going to be on Memory Beta for sure.
Well, okay. It might be on memory beta.
Literary tricks, please advise.
I did have one other thing that I like, and I think this kind of, this could apply to like Klingons in general, but just like there's always their idea of being a warrior culture and being sort of just these, yeah, like honor bound, like, well, I already said it, but yeah, warriors. And it's like, well, how about like the, just like the regular jobs and stuff, you know, people who aren't off fighting. And I just had this idea. I think I've had other people mention it. It's like every Klingon, no matter their job, is like a warrior battling for the Empire. And even like a sewer worker or something like that is a warrior fighting, you know, a war against like filth and, you know, preserving the health and like heartiness of his fellow warriors. So like maybe they all just perceive what they're doing in that sort of sense.
Well, I mean, that's, it brings it back to, you know, what's especially going on Earth today. You have the warriors and the people who are rich and the celebrities that entertain us. But right now, the warriors that we've got are the health service.
Yeah, exactly.
And even those that are working in essential services. So, I agree with that. Is there anything you want to bring up, Brandy? Or do you reckon we are?
I appreciate that they gave us a female Klingon main character here. I mean, granted, she wasn't a main character in the same way that our crew of Discovery are, but to make it so associated with a female perspective was just so refreshing, and to make her as strong and fierce as she is, also so refreshing. And to, yeah, but unfortunately, like so many females in real life, she still has to fight to get the respect that she is due. And she's just magnificent all the time. All the time.
When you say fight, she has a whole bomb underneath Kronos that she has to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get control.
Yeah. And she just, you know, I don't think people quite understand how tall Mary Chifo is. She is over 6 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she is amazing. I mean, she's just so imposing in that Laurel costume. And yet then you see this video that someone shot of her on set lip syncing to a song.
I've seen that with
and you're just looking at her going, I love you. I love you so much.
She's in full costume in her like chancellor's garb and that like black and red dress. With Shahzad Latif kind of as her backup dancer.
Oh yeah, it's so fantastic.
Yeah,
so fantastic. I love it. I love those moments, and I love how hard Mary Chifo worked to portray this character. And I would be very sad if we never see her again, which is why I really hope that there is that Pike series on the way, because you can work Laurel into that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, or even the Section 31 show.
That too. Yeah. Well, it depends on what time the Section 31 show happens. It may not happen in this time period.
True. Now, just as a very quick final thought, Nick, if you had to choose one of the Klingons, I think I know what your answer is going to be, out of the Discovery-style Klingons, the TOS-style Klingons, or the, you know, rest of the series-style Klingons, which would you choose?
Oh, just as in, like, favorite or...?
Yeah, why not?
You know my answer is Laurel. She's just brilliant.
Laurel and the Discovery Klingons, yeah.
So, my honourable mention is obviously Chang from Undiscovered Country.
Oh, okay.
Because there is nothing more entertaining, I think, than him spinning around in his chair, like on the bridge of his ship, screaming, "Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war!"
You haven't experienced Shakespeare until you've read it in the original Klingon.
Oh, I love that movie.
I have to see it again. It's been a long time.
It's just so silly, but they play it so straight, and it's wonderful.
That's why it works.
Yeah. Brandy, what about you?
Well, Laurel's gonna win. However, it's a very close match between her and Chancellor Gorkon for me, because David Warner never phones it in, and he's a very wise leader.
Yeah,
he recognizes that his empire is dying, and that they need outside help, and he wants to save his people. And so he is totally ready to sit down with the Federation, and even with his dying breath, "Don't let it end this way," he begs of Kirk, tugging at my heart.
I'd have to say mine's probably Laurel as well. I mean, I'm not saying that just because we're all on a Discovery podcast. I feel like she's one of the best. She is very closely followed by probably Martok. I do enjoy Martok a lot. And I do have a secret sort of... I do have a little thing for Gowron. So I always you just like- find his eyes funny. I just love his eyes.
They're so mesmerizing.
My eyes don't like it when I do this for a long period of time because I have very big eyes and they need to blink. Oh, Bob O'Reilly, you really just nailed that performance.
It's just been fun honoring the Klingons today. I feel like we will be all going to Stovacor once we pass on. But this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here is a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think it's interesting that the show keeps kind of bringing up these associations, even if it's just in the naming of a planet or something, you know, and again, sort of grounding it in our own history and our own culture and our own world to some extent. Although I think a lot of people, when at the end of The Impossible Box, when Picard says, "Send us to Nepenthe," and it was all in this kind of rather a lot of drama and noise and stuff going on, a lot of people thought they were ending up in the, you know, Klingon gulag. And it's a good job that Hugh heard him correctly, you know, and sent him to the right planet, because otherwise that could have been a whole different episode.
Earl Grey.
And sort of the reason behind it and why it's necessary. And so I would, of course, keep this scene in.
I would too. I like Troy here. I think it would have been better if he got back to his quarters and he was so frustrated that he broke a table and then Troy arrived. That would have, like, that would have made it perfect.
Cue Troy, yes.
Exactly. But nevertheless, she still arrives even though a table hasn't been broken.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Anyway, our space whale is coming on the scene now. So they get to the bridge and it's yellow alert. It's a space whale. Burnham identifies it and explains that it's on the endangered species list and that they need to transport it to a sanctuary. And so Lorca's like, fine, just whatever. So,
I mean, it's one of these points now that you sort of kind of think that looking back on it, knowing we know he's from the Mirror Universe, they would not have had that kind of regulation in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
True.
So you can sort of, one of those little peppered things where it's like, yeah, he's not what he seems.
Mm-hmm.
To the journey!
What do you reckon of this episode, Joe?
See the way you feel about Hugh and Iborg, I feel about One.
You think One's cute?
What? There's something about One. He's like Hunky Borg.
Hunky Borg.
No, seriously, there's something big and robust about him. Yeah, I definitely do that.
But cat suits are a problem.
Yeah, I don't go in for boobs so much, so I like my Hunky Borg dudes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. I don't know why I said it that way. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Now, if you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the Desktop Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. It helps us jump up the charts and find more listeners. And remember, constructive criticism only.
Or just tell us how much you love us.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what kind of praise you give us. Just you know, praise us, please.
All the praise.
Please. We're so hungry for it.
Love me.
And if you're not an Apple user and want to praise us as well, we've got you covered there too. You can find...
Except I don't know where I'll find your praise because the app only works for Apple.
But you can find our shows on Google Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
So, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show and our wonderful Klingon singing. Maybe not so wonderful. But there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That will come straight to me, and I will then share it with the guys. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Nick, when you are not drunkenly singing Klingon songs, where can people find you?
You can find me drunkenly singing other songs. No.
you can singing a bit of Johnny Farnham. A
bit of the Pogues or the Dubliners usually when I've been drinking.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, dear. You can find me on Twitter, where I am at punkzoologist, and also on Instagram, I am at punkrockzoologist, and you can find me chatting and commenting in the Babel Conference. Liam, when you're not getting lost in Gowron's eyes, where can people find you?
Lost in Gowron's pants. Anyway.
Well, he does have two penises.
Klingon tuning fork.
Oh, could that be the name of the episode? But with no context? We can't leave any of that in, but we just call it Klingon tuning fork. And then it was like, why did you call it that?
I was actually singing of the 80s Debbie Gibson song, Lost in Your Eyes, thinking of you singing that to Gowron. I get lost in your eyes, and I feel my spirit rise. Yeah, and it feels something else rising is what you're thinking.
Let me check my key. Ding.
Cut all of this out, please, including my singing.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, this again, yeah, oh, God. It could also be like that Minogue, Kylie or Danny Minogue song, It's in Your Eyes.
Or the one. Peter Gabriel song, The Light, the Heat in Your Eyes, I Am Complete. Sorry.
Oh, anyway, I don't know how much of what we've just said I can leave in, so this may be totally out of context. You can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me on To The Journey, our Star Trek Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm already on the Star Trek Discovery one right now. Yeah, I don't know where I'm at. So, yeah, you can find me there in the Babel Conference. So, anyway. So, Brandy, when you're not practicing your Shakespearean Klingon with your cardboard cut out of Spock, where can we find you on the internet?
Thank you for that idea. I appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter at Brandywine12. You will find me here someday soon, hopefully, when Discovery comes back. You will find me on Live from the Edge with Bruce Gibson here on Trek FM as well. And you can find me on Friday evenings, depending on where you are in the world. It may be Saturday mornings on The Unready Room with Bruce and with Dan Gunther. And you can find that at Dan's YouTube channel, which is Kurt Ratz Productions. I also do a podcast with my hubby Dave called the Dark Corner Podcast. We actually recorded an episode today where we did a movie commentary because we did not have time to really prepare a normal topic. So we default to movie commentaries because they take almost no preparation. But you can find that at darkcornerpodcast.com. You can also find at darkcornerpodcast.com my solo podcast, Headcanon.
where I talk about whatever nerdy thing that I want, and it's usually a very rambly trip through the chaos in my head.
Even more so than what we talk about on Discovery podcast on the Edge.
You know, you've listened to it.
I know, it's great. You should listen to it.
And we would love to give a shout out to our most honorable warriors today, those being our patrons on Patreon, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Paleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Millette, and Chris Trebuzio. Thank you all for supporting The Edge and Trek FM via Patreon. And if you'd like to become an associate producer of The Edge or one of our other shows on Trek FM and take part in our Patrons Roundtable, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That is patreon.com/trekfm.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time to see what's happening on The Edge of Klingon space.
All right, I'm going to start with that note.
Huh?
I'm getting my starting note in my head. All right, I think that works.
This is going to be ridiculous.
You two were so not on the same note. You were more harmonizing, Liam.
I don't know what that means.
Yes, you do. I explained it to you.
Oh, this is ages. Is that when I'm like singing the same C but in a different octave?
No, not necessarily.
A different note, but they come together to make a chord.
Oh, what? So like you've got like a C, but I could be singing in an E. Okay.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it.
Well, we'll just see how bad it sounds, shall we? I mean, we could just be drunk, so.
I mean, it is a drinking song.
That's
that works.
Perfect, because it's a drinking song. Yeah.
Okay.
Go for it. I love it. Let's do it. I'm going to just the disc now.
I'll try to count us in.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3. This is not working because we are ever so slightly out of sync.
Let's just sing it, and then, like, if it's out of sync, like, you're, like, 2 seconds behind, or not 2 seconds, but I can always just, like, move us a little bit.
You could try, yeah.
You can match it up, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Asian Tafe Deja E.
I thought we were doing...
Do a count in?
Yeah. Sorry, Brandy.
Are you kidding? This is comedy gold.
All right. 1, 2, 3.
Asian Tafe Deja E.
Eshdoxotash
Goshvashtral by Tink and Banshash
Lomog Josh Bush
Josh Kalesh Molor Mi Hoch Chew Groove. That was awful.
Damn it. I mean, you might have one good recording of me doing it from the start.
Can you sing it quicker?
Yes.
Okay, let's try it.
Yeah, make it less like a dirge
or
like a drinking song.
Yeah, more like we've an upbeat. Yeah.